woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Well, welcome back to Dr. Jack. I'm Tom Al. She's Jay-Z, Jessica Zalewski on the board on a Wednesday. And nobody wants to know why she can't come on Thursday. But Jessica might tell us. S&P futures down 7.25. Dow futures down 45. NASDAQ futures down 35. We have Jay-Z this morning, Kevin.
I know. It's always a good day when Jessica's around.
Now, why do you suppose she's here on Wednesday and not Thursday?
Just because it's my day and, you know, everybody wants to be around for my day here.
That would be a good question. She was solving global warming or she was, solving the refugee situation, but none of those things. It has to do more with karaoke.
She just thought it was Thursday and showed up.
No, karaoke tonight.
Oh, okay.
Not sure you want to be around. Did you ever? There was a place in actually a gorgeous place in Scottsdale, Gainey Ranch. You ever go to that place, the Hyatt at Gainey Ranch?
No.
It's absolutely a spectacular place. But the weird part, they always have a terrific band, and it's one of those places where the weather's always so spectacular. You basically just go outside. And, you can sit around the pool at night and hear the band and the whole bit. When one of the little bars out by the pool, they do karaoke. But as the sound from, it's all kind of concrete, as the sound from the bar also kind of heads out, so does the karaoke of the little bar sort of not stay at the little bar. And let's just say people are caterwauling, you can hear them like 100 yards away, your part by the pool, and there they are, everybody's... it's bad. But I'm sure Jessica sings like a canary.
All right, well, let's get Jessica on here and ask her what her favorite karaoke song is.
Well, she was asking me what should she sing tonight.
Yeah, I was looking for suggestions on what I should sing tonight. First song I sang was, all my friends were like, don't do that, because it's so long. But I sang Bohemian Rhapsody, and everyone loved it. But last week...
Oh, good, because that takes some voice to do that.
Yeah.
Everyone loved it because it's actually like relatively easy to sing along to. In karaoke, they post it like not just for you, but they also post it for the rest of the bar so they could see the words and stuff, and everyone was like singing along. And then last week I did Mamma Mia by ABBA.
Okay. I'll go.
I don't know.
Not in a Gotta DeVito though, huh?
No.
No, not too.
It's like one line.
Kevin, you're good at movies. You got to be good at karaoke songs too.
Kevin's the best at music.
Oh, I would be good at karaoke songs if only I didn't have to sing. I have no ability to carry a tune.
No one can at karaoke. What's funny.
People stare you down during the national anthem at a ball game and ask you why you're showing such disrespect for the country.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It is bad.
So, Kevin, what made the Attorney General wake up last night and decide they're going to investigate the big firms, the big high tech firms? And what exactly are they going to do to these places? I don't think they have a clue. Do you?
Well, this came up yesterday as the truth. You know that what's the truth question for the interview, and you know that those companies, some of those tech, and I'm not sure I'd even call. I guess Google's a high-tech firm. That, you know, when I think of high-tech, I think of people who are really inventing stuff. Google's a data firm. And Facebook is a data company, and you know.
Yeah, I would say I wouldn't call them high tech either, but
it's not that there isn't a lot of technology behind what they do, because there certainly is. But you know, when I think of high tech, I think of the people doing it, you know, advanced robotics, and you know, I was at an expo yesterday that had all kinds of really really cool manufacturing stuff that. You know, the kinds of things that are really going to reshape how business is done. What I do think, and I agree that they're a big threat, but I don't know it's that they could be a threat because of how they choose to operate. But what I really think has happened with them is that they open Pandora's box and they can't control it. That there is so much data there, and they wanted to monetize all the data that they could gather. And they've done that successfully, except that it's out of control. It's out of their control. And so many people are getting so much information and using it for so many bad reasons, as well as the commercial reasons. And they just can't stop it. They can't control it.
I wonder, you know, as you know, Kevin, I try and have somewhat of a theme on the show that everything kind of connects with everything else, and you just wonder, as earnings are coming out this week, I mean, obviously, you're in business to make a profit for shareholders, but then when you look at short-term profits versus long-term profits, there can be a major difference in the morality there, or in the way you do business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to leave in September, and your bonus is totally based on the next quarter, I mean, it's probably worth it for you to pour the pollution in a creek, right?
But whether you're going to leave or whether you're going to stay, if your bonus is based on the next quarter or year-end earnings or something, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, the pollutants in the creek. It can be, you know, it can just be the decisions you make. There are decisions that are, you know, that have better short-term effect and are trouble for the, you know, or not necessarily trouble, but aren't as good for the long-term. And if you're making longer-term decisions, you may take some short-term hits for it, and that may hit your bonus.
But it's also...
Yeah, they would be the right things to do.
Right. But you have... I'm saying is if you look forward 10 years and you say, if I'm still here, it's going to cost me more to clean up the creek when they eventually find me. Even if I pay people off, there'll be someday somewhere somebody's going to say, these bleeps and pouring stuff in the creek is going to cost me more. So in the long-term view, I'm better off obeying the rules, even if I'm such a sleazebag that I don't want to. I mean, but it also comes down to people's view of your profit motive. In other words, I mean, you know, Jay-Z shows up every week looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and now there would be people that say on the way in, that's the waste of a perfectly good behind. There should be a Coca-Cola sign on the back of Jay-Z's pants, in case somebody ever looks at her tush. There should be an ad there, right? I mean, and most people would say, "What are you talking about?" But
Tom, you come up with the weirdest example.
But I'm saying it's true though. I mean, because everybody feels. I mean, go to a football game. There's 80,000 people here. How do we not run a commercial? Well, because people paid for a football game. It doesn't matter. They're here. They deserve a commercial. They're not going to get up and walk out. It's a question of how much you push, Kevin. I mean, so when I'm getting to Google. Now, when I first started using Google, how many long years ago, it seemed to me that they had the correct way of at least putting forth what they were doing. If you did a search, the search was, you know, somewhat random, not random, but search was based on the amount of, you know, words you hit and so forth. And there was a stack on the left of the things you searched for. So if we search for screwdriver, okay, the stuff on the left I thought was somewhat of a straight search. Now on the right, there were people who paid, Ace Hardware, True Value, Home Depot, whoever, that if you searched for screwdriver, it should come up. It would come up on the right, and you knew that was a paid ad. And I said to myself, self, this is very fair. I know the thing on the right is a paid ad. The left, I'm assuming, or I would like to think, is a somewhat, you know, what's the word? Not random, but you know what I'm saying, a fair search. But I know at Google, someplace somewhere in the board, boardroom or someplace, somebody's going to say, hey, look, everybody's bitching at us and we're not monetizing this enough. Everybody knows that the high spot on the left side of the page is probably worth more than the one that everybody knows on the right side of the page, that everybody knows is an ad. So we should really sneak ways where people pay us to get the high on the left side of the page without telling anybody. I mean, I know somebody's going to say that, Kevin. I mean, and then somebody's going to say, well, you are right. I mean, and then all of a sudden it moves to the left side and you don't have the search thing that you had. I'm saying it's just a matter of, it's just a conscious creep. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I wasn't making fun of the way Jay-Z dressed. I never would. She always looks terrific. But my point is, even my behind, it's a bigger behind. You know, there should be a Valvoline sticker on the back of it. It could be a billboard. But I mean, it's at some point you got to say, are we going to be honest with people or aren't we? And you know, there needs to be an adult in the room somewhere. But obviously you don't see it. You can pay $1,000 for a Bulls ticket and have you know, the dancing Doritos blaring in your ear. I mean, you know, I guess you could not go because clearly it doesn't seem to have, you know, affected their attendance, but maybe it has and they just don't have a way to count it. I don't know. But these are all the questions of our time, you know, and they come to an even bigger time on earnings week, you know, type of thing. I mean, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, and all everybody cares, you know, you're $1.21 versus $1.22, that type of thing. At least that's what the CNBC would have you believe. So, I mean,
yeah, I think you need to, you need to sort of delineate the different kinds of behaviors that come into play. So one, it would be the flagrantly illegal, like dumping waste
right
in the creek. I don't think many people do that. Even with earnings pressure, even with bonus pressure and things like that, I just think that's a very few people. Most people are more ethical than that. Now, the second one is what you're discussing is failure to disclose, and I think that's a problem. And a substantial problem. And, you know, I guess the third one would just be outright misrepresenting, which, you know, it, again, is unethical business practice. Because it kind of falls along the same lines as failure to disclose. But, you know, if you represent your product to do something that it doesn't do, or if you fail to, you know, you tell people that that's an honest search, and the first one in line is always going to be the one that is the most popular, gets the most hits, et cetera, then, you know, that if that's not the case, then that's lying, and that
I would say
may not be illegal, but it is certainly unethical.
I would say, Kevin, in most boardrooms in this land, if you walked in and said, you know, when everybody's bitching about, you know, how come the stock's not higher, and everybody's got stock options, and somebody walks in and says, we're giving away the first place. You know, we can be honest, some places 10 down, but we can't give away the first 9 places because people are willing to pay more for those than they are for the one on the right. I guarantee you that there you have massive votes saying, what are we doing here? Why are we giving away something?
Oh, you also understand that in some of these searches, they are giving you the most popular result, you know, that they are fair search, and Google may be. I'd have to look at that. But then you take somebody like a Start Page or DuckDuckGo, where what they're really doing instead is the difference between their product and Google's product is that they are not sharing your personal information. They're not sharing information about you. So they do give. Because part of this is they give feedback to advertisers. They give advertisers intelligence data about who searches, how searches, how they search, how they click through, all of those kinds of things. And the difference is that Google will also say, because you're logged into your Gmail account or your Google account or whatever, they will also share data about you specifically. And, you know, Tom Howe's shopping habits and Tom Howe's search habits and where he goes and what's important so that you can be targeted advertisement.
I'd be targeted for a guy
if you use Start Page because it will still share the data about searches but in the macro level, but they will not share personal information.
And so
they're leaving money on the table, but their business model is that they're selling more privacy.
Here's what I'm concerned about, Kevin, is that obviously I have you on, and I want to talk to you about the Chrome and Firefox fiasco that I sent you last week. I don't know if you read it or not, but yeah. I want to quiz our girl, Jay-Z. A lot of the people that I know, like Thomas being one of them, Maddie Weber, maybe not so. But I think that you, if you're you and I are still, I won't say concerned enough, pissed off enough. I mean, you obviously use something other than Google. I just don't use the stuff very much. You know, is my defense. I obviously do for my business. If I'm digging for a a story for a stock that some of my people have, then I'll dig as far as I can. But in general, I mean, I don't use the internet that much. I mean, I'll look for old trucks on there or something that I think is somewhat innocuous. If somebody cares, I guess, whether I'm looking for a 93 Dodge truck, I guess go for it. But I think most people, Kevin, to be perfectly honest, have given up. They're tired of reading. I mean, I've heard a million people, I don't know a million people, but all the people I know say to me, what are you, some kind of moron? You're still using, what the hell do I use? I use the Microsoft browser. Why aren't you using Firefox? Why aren't you using Chrome? Now, last week, I get this thing, and I sent it out to all you guys. It says if you have Firefox or Chrome, if you've downloaded one innocuous little thing, and I forget what it was, I figured I'd ask you because you know what the hell I'm talking about here. I don't.
Yeah, I forget which add-in or plug-in was, depending on...
But then all of a sudden, everything that you go for is immediately shipped to somebody else without you even knowing it. And then I think, to be honest, most people, and I'll ask Jay-Z, I'm not going to speak for, I think a lot of young people have gone, I can't stop it, it's just out there, I'm just not that interesting, let them have it. And you know what? I think that's, they've absolutely thrown up their hands at trying to defend themselves against it, Kevin, and then they don't care. I mean, you look at a Facebook. This year, we had Jeff Joseph on yesterday. He goes, a company couldn't have had a worse year in terms of federal scrutiny, in terms of fines, in terms of everything else, and the stock is up 50%, and the amount of people use them is going up by 10 or something. I mean, the disconnect between what people are pissed off about these places are doing and how many people use them is like, I mean, I don't even know what that means. I mean, I guess it's almost like not liking John D. Rockefeller, but having to put gas in your tank. I mean, it must be sort of the same thing, right? I mean,
I think that's probably a really good analogy. You have to operate in today's world, but there are ways to work around some of that so that you can mitigate the exposure. In a lot of cases, it very much is the attitude that says, what do I care? Like you said, I'm not that interesting. Let them knock themselves out. I don't buy into that any more than you get a traffic stop and you get asked to, can I search your car? No. Why? You got something to hide? No, I don't have anything to hide. But you don't have a right to search my car.
Right.
So we're not gonna. And that's
right.
Just the way it is. I think it's a bad idea to surrender rights. It just is.
Yeah, I think it is too.
But I think it's that same mentality that says, okay, well, I don't have anything to hide, so what? Well, you know what? You don't. But maybe you will have something that you really would rather not be public domain at some point. That's possible. Maybe it's as simple as you just never want to give it up, because if you're giving it up, it's sort of the precedent that everybody should be giving them up. You don't want that mindset. You don't want that to creep into how we, to how we legislate, to how we how businesses operate. There's so much wrong with it, and that's what we have to.
You do realize, Kevin, that you and I are to be very gross. You and I are really peeing into the wind on this one, because not very many people feel this way. I mean, let's put it this way: they might feel this way, but it's not worth their time or energy even to like tweet in and say I agree with you. You know, it just is what it is. There's a phrase that should not be in the language, but it is what it is, and I've just got to deal with it type of thing. But to me, it's if somebody, obviously what I'm doing, which seems perfectly boring to me, what I'm doing must not be all that boring, because somebody's darn anxious to look at it. So it's that boring to somebody.
And really just darn anxious to sell stuff to you.
Well, why does the The Tollway Authority, which, of course, has to have more money every friggin', you know, whatever, than increase those. Why do they go out of their way to put, what do you call it, the things you use where you go through the tolls and it pays on it, it's called a transponder? They put transponder towers on streets that aren't the toll road to find out where those people are driving when they're not on the toll road. Now, explain to me.
They're doing you a favor, Tom. They're getting down the traffic patterns.
Explain to me, Lucy, why that is the business of the toll road and why somebody's brother-in-law is putting up that tower for all that money so they could spy on me and you. Explain to me how they have anywhere where the governor doesn't fire everybody who thought that up and tear the damn things down. Because he's a loser, the governor, I think. But
let's run with the idea that it is a legitimate use because you really can help do traffic planning. Is there any reason that the data that they gather has to say Tom Howe and Kevin O'Neill?
It doesn't, but I'm sure it does.
I'm sure it does too.
I'll bet.
So you know, again, if you really want to do it right. And you think there's value in, you know, there's a service value to the citizens for doing that, then that's fine. But tell me how you're going to protect my privacy. Tell me why it matters that Tom Howe drove down the road.
Okay, but
at that hour, at that day, because when it doesn't matter, then you don't capture that data.
But if you had
this shouldn't be hard.
I know, but if you had a. I'll make it an illusion. The toll road is a public piece that somehow or another we decided we should pay for in perpetuity, even though that was not the way it was set up. Now, if you, Kevin O'Neill, put up O'Neill's dry goods store, what has an old term, or hardware store, and you have a special whatever credit card for O'Neill's, and all of a sudden you shut one day for an hour, in the meantime you've managed to talk the government into letting you put up little things that gets the track the chip in your credit card. Do you get the right to find out where all these people went when your store was closed for an hour? I mean, what are you doing with that information? What makes the Tri-State Toll Road Authority able to buy property on Elston Avenue somewhere, put up a tower, and say, I want to track people that aren't on the Tri-State? What's that got to do with the Tri-State? If the state wants to look at traffic patterns in general and wants to track see where people are going. All you got to do is look at the amount of cars on the street. For God's sake, you don't need a transponder for that.
I honestly, you know, the argument I'm making, I realize is that there are a whole lot of other ways to look at it. I'm just saying that you know there is no interest in protecting your privacy.
Well, but what you're saying is the way the thing was set up. Oh, I'll have you married again and getting divorced again, which you know I don't want to give you that nightmare, but. Getting divorced again, and all of a sudden, here's a subpoena from the state for all their stuff, and they're going to find out that Kevin O'Neill drove down Elston Avenue every Tuesday at noon to get a nooner. Okay, what are they doing with that? And how, I mean, first of all, why is Kevin O'Neill's attached to it if all we cared about is a car is going down Elston? Right. Well, here's I'll ask a question. The listeners want to. If we told somebody today, if we got a governor that was, you know, had some spine, I hope this one does, but my early reads are no. If you were to say to the Toll Road Authority, this rule says 60 days, first of all, people can't pay. You pay in advance. If you don't have money in your credit card, they charge your credit card while you're still on the road, for God's sake. So there's no chance of people not paying. So the idea of having to send somebody a bill and producing the evidence a year from now is useless because you pay in advance. There's no way you can game this system. So if you were to say, hey, the rule says 60 days, get rid of this data. If you said that from the governor, I don't want dictators. I'm always, you know, people are saying that I think Trump wants to be a dictator and blah, 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 and people will admonish me. But the fact is, you would think if you were the governor and that was the rule and you told your employees, even though they're not necessarily yours, I mean, sometimes I wander into Trump land myself, but hey, the rule says 60 days. I want the stuff bleep canned after 60 days. Do you think
can we have an audit done once in a while and publish the results, please?
Do you think for a second, Kevin, that somebody somewhere will not ignore me and keep that data?
I suspect that nobody ever does it because it is just it takes a little bit of work to archive things properly. Not that that's hard either. It could be totally automatic. It really would not be hard to do that. But is somebody doing it? I think there's a lot of people who hang on to data, and businesses will do this too, that hang on to data because we might want that someday.
I think
it
somebody's going to put
value to us someday.
Somebody somewhere is going to put a thumb drive in there and say, somebody will pay this for me in a divorce. They'll pay for something. Somebody will have that data.
Yeah. And sometimes what they'll do.
Kevin, hold that thought, buddy. S&P futures down 7.
It offline.
Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ down 36. This is after Attorney General's going to head for the big stocks. I'll talk about where they are individually when we come back from the break.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hoch. She's Jay-Z on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill's with us. But before we get back to him, a couple of earnings came out. We have Boeing reported minus 580 a share, which should be understandable because they said they were going to write off $4 billion, 4.7 on the 737 fiasco. So far, I'm gonna take the bet that it's 12 to 16 when it's all over, maybe more. So we've got Boeing down 307, which is not horrible. I mean, like I said, it was telegraphed last week. So Caterpillar is the one down $4. They missed by about 20 cents, 283 versus 312. So they are down some. S&P futures down 7.25. NASDAQ futures down 31. Dow futures down like pretty much right at 100. The other stocks I was going to talk about was we've got Amazon. We got Netflix down 20 cents. So I don't know if they're part of the high tech gang. We've got Google down $12. We've got Amazon down 16. So not horrible in that area, but they're down a little bit. I think some of that has to do with, obviously, the Justice Department announcement. Around the rest of the world, we've got Europe. We've got the DAX up 47.3%. FTSE down 68.9%. It's interesting. Kekaran down 17.3%. We've got, I don't know where the FTSE thing's coming from. Asia up 80, and these guys were all down yesterday pretty heavy, and then the market was up, so they're bouncing back some. Nikkei up 88.4%, Shanghai up 23.8%, Hang Seng up 57.2%. Yesterday was your basic for the 100th time. We're going to start talking in China rally. We've done that so many times, it's sort of getting a little boring, but it isn't if you're long. It's a good day. Oil up 30 cents, 57.07. Brent up 22, $64. RBOB gas, 185. We got gold up another $4, 14.26. Silver up 8 cents. Boy, that has really come back to match gold. I don't know how much higher these guys are going, but that $15 to $16.56. I was waiting for silver to go over $15 for like a year and a half. Now I went through it like dinner through a goose. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, golf, or in sports? I would say golf, sports.
Well, that's a sport.
I was playing the other day, so I'm still thinking about Olympia Fields, how beautiful it was, and how bad I hacked it up.
Anyway, good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Chicago weather today is sunny with a high of 76, low of 63. Phoenix is cloudy with a high of 104, low of 87. In baseball, the White Sox lost to the Marlins 5-1. The Cubs lost to the Giants 5-4. And finally, the Diamondbacks lost to the Orioles 7-2. In traffic, there was just one accident on the Edens going west just before Wilson Avenue, causing some delays. Nothing else to report. Back to you.
So, Kevin, is it your Catholic upbringing, is it a sin when you're out on some fairway that doesn't have one speck, risen a blade out of looking the wrong way, and you pull out your gap wedge, which you've never known how to hit, and still you have it in your bag for some stupid reason, and there's the ball sitting right there, and you take a mighty swing, and you hit about 2 inches before the ball, and just take some huge toupee out of the fairway, and as much as you try and repair it, it just doesn't look the same.
Tom, I kind of think your whole golf game is a sin, isn't it?
It's getting that way. It's getting that way. Maybe one out of five is decent, though. If I could putt, I'd say it was a I was a one-tool player. I could at least putt, but I can't even do that anymore.
A one-tool player. I love it.
Well, in softball, I definitely am. I can still pitch. Can't run, can't hit, can't throw, can't field. So it's a one-tool player.
Other than that, you're a heck of a guy, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's something. Yeah. Just don't hit it at me. Don't make me run, and please, if I hit one, try not to run too fast and catch it, you know, type of thing.
Yeah, because that can be dangerous to your health.
Yeah, so it's
You do get to a certain point in your career, in your athletic career, where the first rule of the game is don't get hurt.
Yeah, but you know, the interesting part is a lot of these young guys still want me playing because somehow or another they don't know how to pitch.
Oh, I never knew how to pitch. I mean, heck, my team never wanted me to pitch batting practice because I was so bad at it.
Well, it's kind of just practice, and you get tired of getting clobbered, so you keep trying stuff to finally get something that works.
Yeah, well, as pitchers go, I was a heck of a first baseman.
Yes. So you were saying before the break, we were talking a little bit about the I don't know if you listened. We'll change subjects a little bit. The Elizabeth Warren recession story. Did you read that?
No. What she had to say?
Well, she was talking about
what she had to say this time.
Yeah, well, she's talking about the incredible amount of debt we have, in her mind, is going to bring on a recession, and a big one. Because, in fact, you know, even though there's obviously things, the stock market's up a lot higher and more people are working and all those kinds of things, if you look at the debt numbers from 2007, 8, 9 to today, you could, if you were a cynic, that's kind of the theme of this whole thing, and that's why I want to run up by you, is that depending on what you look at, you can be a cynic or you can be bullish, you can be bearish. And for one of the first times, I agree with Elizabeth Warren. I've never really disagreed with her ability to point out stuff that probably is going the wrong direction. I just am not all that sold on a lot of her solutions. And I'd love to talk to her about it. Maybe I could get her to change a little bit. Who knows? I doubt it. But I mean, the idea that you can look and see that the massive amount of debt since 2009 is really, if you, like I said, if you were a cynic, you would say that's the only reason why the economy is any better. I mean, if we're growing 2 or 3% a year, it's because the federal government deficit is growing by the 2 or 3% a year. That essentially, if you look at the growth in borrowing of all sorts, and you look at how much the economy has grown, one basically matches the other. Or actually, you might even
say, I don't know that you have to be a cynic to come up with that conclusion.
No, but you could say that this thing is all borrowed, and one of these days we're going to have to pay the piper when we can't go any further. And you can see.
Well, yeah, and I how much we're actually going to have to pay, as long as you keep printing, I mean, all you're doing is devaluing your currency, which, I don't mean to trivialize that. What you're really doing is you're sucking capital out of the economy. You're sucking productive capital out of
right.
the economy because you got to service the debt one way or the other.
Well, or you drop your interest rates down to zero, so you don't have to service it. But now people aren't earning interest on their money, which is an income drain on your population. I mean, everything you do. I mean,
so whatever it is, though, you're having a big effect,
yeah.
And I think we agree on that. And so. You know, you can even say, and I'm sure there are people out there who will argue that the debt doesn't matter much. And, I would say to the extent that it's taking, to the extent that it's doing anything to take capital out of the economy, it matters a great deal.
Well, let's just say the person who wrote this, Jeff Cox, who's a CNBC.com contributor, I'm going to say is no Kevin O'Neill. Because you could never write this article. It bounces back and forth, and I'm getting good at this as an old grumpy guy. If you bounce back from the mean average to the median, judiciously enough, you could make any argument, Kevin. They're talking about even though
that's why means and medians are fairly worthless statistics.
The mean more so.
No, they are. You use them as a basis for understanding variance and random fluctuations.
Okay.
Okay. Right, so they're part of the mathematical formula, but in and of themselves, they're basically lousy statistics.
Okay. Now, but here's a jump. Now, here's what Kevin O'Neill would never do. But this is not very clever. This guy spent some time on this article. But now just listen to this. I mean, it's not me to be a critique like an English teacher here, but. When it comes to the subject that I'm near and dear to me,
well,
I guess I get to
speak the language too.
I'll get Jay-Z, since you are a straight A college student, you can be on the debt issue. Warren is correct in pointing out that the aggregate levels have increased. Now, housing debt has jumped from $2.6 trillion in mid-2009, the last recession was ending, to $4 trillion at the end of the first quarter of 2019, an increase of 52.8% in basically 10 years. So that's a lot. More importantly, though, no, this is it. More importantly, though. Consumers' ability to pay has increased at a pace well above aggregate debt totals. Now, he says household net worth currently stands at $108.6 trillion, more than double the $50 trillion where it was in June 2009, according to the Fed. And at the same time, total household debt is $15.7 trillion, or about 14.4% of total net worth. In June 2009, the total debt was $13.3 trillion, or 27% of total net worth, or just shy of double. Now, first of all, Kevin, why do you shift here to total household net worth when you know that in the last 10 years, the top 1%, if you look at just plain equity, not income, has grabbed some 90% of the increase, or 85 or 80. Because when you start talking about household net worth, you're talking about property values, you're talking about stock prices, correct, and bond prices.
Well, yeah, and part of let me go back and ask that question: how much of that 1% became part of the 1% through the process, and but wasn't there before? Because one of the things is the top levels of the economy, not necessarily the 1%, but the top 10% is pretty transient. People enter and people exit all the time.
Well, I mean, if there's
but,
one,
but I would also I'm also going to go back to you and say, why would anybody compare anything to when was it in 2009?
Well,
what month?
Yeah, well, it was June of 2009, which is when the market was where it was 40%, 40. It was like 50-60%.
Market lower. Was horrible. The economy was horrible. The unemployment rate was at record highs or near record highs. And, you know, everything was awful, and that's going to be our baseline for comparison? I don't think so.
Well,
you know, what was it? How does it compare to 2007 at the same time? How does it compare to 2005? You know, I mean, this is, you know, first of all, people, you know, I always tell you, statistics always get me asking questions.
Well, yeah, well, here's
settling in on answers.
We only have a minute before a break here, but let me run this one by it. In our day, you could never write this, because when you looked at people's debt, the amount they're going to go pay for their mortgage, the amount they're going to pay for their car, if they have a student loan debt for their kid or something, it was always compared versus income, correct? Can I pay off the $30 a month for the car loan or $100 and still do everything else right? And the answer is yes. Then it was okay. But didn't the 2007, 2008, 2009 teach us any kind of a lesson to where when you start borrowing based on your house's value and not on your ability to pay the rent? We'll talk about this after the break. S&P futures down 775. NASDAQ futures down 32. Dow down 100. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everyone. Back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hosh. He's Jay Z on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill as well. SP futures now down 8. NASDAQ futures down 34. Boeing's bounced back. Well, no, it isn't. It's actually down 447 now. Caterpillar's down 430. Those are the big losers. And the Dow both came out with earnings that weren't so hot. And I guess the Boeing was to be anticipated, since they basically said what the write-off, the initial write-off, is going to be. But I don't believe, Kevin, that that includes any payments to airlines for not, for planes not being able to go up in the air. So, I mean, it's... there's more to come there. I don't know how. I know when we first started doing that at Pullman, it starts to roll downhill. But I guess we'll kind of cut this off, Kevin. But I'll say what happens here is in this article, and this is what, you know, you don't like this to get percolate through the system. I mean, you're in my view of the world was set when we were younger, and if somebody made 100 hours a week and could live comfortably on 80. And put 20 in the bank, that's how you built wealth. Okay, now in today's world, people don't, and there aren't a whole lot of people that are, well, first of all, 100 hours a week doesn't get you anywhere, but the percentage, nobody, I don't think many people are able to save 20% of their paycheck. So the idea then is you're going to have to buy a stock that, you know, is the new, Beyond Meat or whatever, that runs up to a certain amount, and that's how you make your money, but you really don't gain wealth by, quote, working. Which to me is a, you know, but the idea that your debt load now should be based on your equity and not your income. It's like if PTI wanted to buy another firm, okay, and we borrowed some money and we had to pay, in order to pay the loan back, it cost us $20,000 a month. Well, if we're making $100,000 a month every month, which, you know, that would be terrific, and have for 5 years, and it's like an annuity when I say that, in the sense that we're steady and no problems on the horizon. Now, for me to do that, it might be an okay idea. For me to say, well, we're not doing so hot, but by the way, I just heard that somebody bought a place like PTI for $20 million, so let's go for it. I'm like, wait a minute. That's a whole different discussion, isn't it? I mean, you know, so you gotta have to be careful when you start talking about debt loads versus household equity versus income, correct? I mean, and when you have people write articles like this, I wonder if people's minds get blinded by what's really going on here. I find it an amazing lack of, I talk to people, and again, it's, to be fair, this is my business, you know, so I went to school a long time to learn it, and I went to different companies where I developed different skills, and then obviously I've been here for a while on the trading floor. So it's a skill set like you have in your business. I mean, nobody's going to argue with you about supply management and computers and delivering this and that and banking. Why would they? I mean, it's a zero-sum game. You can't argue with you. You know way more than the next guy. But it's this. These are basic economic principles.
People argue with me anyway.
Well, that's true. But I mean, these are basic economic principles that involve how to run a household. Oh, yeah, I can get that loan. Why? What makes you think you can get that loan? You're spending every nickel you got now. Well, that's okay. I'll throw it on the house. The house is going up. Whoa, wait a minute. Houses can go back down. Ah, they never go down. Well, they just did. Am I wrong here or what? And when we have articles like this.
I don't think you're wrong at all. I also think we talked about this last week, that, you know, what we did was, as we pushed home ownership, and easy money, that so much of that was, teaser rates and no principal payments and things like that, that when it came time and tied to balloon dates, or at least repricing dates, when it came time for all those to reprice, they repriced at the same time, and they repriced at a bad time.
Yep.
Because there was other stuff going on, fuel prices being number one, which is, you know, when they spiked, and I mean, it wasn't just like they went up 20 cents, they spiked over $4. problem. And all of a sudden, you know, we find ourselves, you know, deeply in debt because, you know, one of the other things is we don't ask the questions of what could go wrong. What could really upset the apple cart here? And what could did?
Well, but you also had, except for the Great Depression and a couple other times where there was a minor blip, you know, equity in a home in the U.S. was about the best capital in the world. Most of the time. And when the prices were going up, the last thing you wanted to do was pay for a down payment. Why would I? The thing's going to be up more a week from now. Right? I mean, there are times when you don't want any, and you want to have 100% leverage. I mean, the difference between what's the greatest thing in the world? Leverage. What's the worst thing in the world? Leverage.
Leverage.
The difference is timing, right?
I mean, right. And the right. What we were saying, we lived in a time when, you know, of course homes always went up, but we never lived in a time that everything was on a variable rate and was going to reprice at all the same times.
Well, right.
And so, you know, when we were going to reprice upwards on rates and raise people's payments all at the same time and make their homes that they've owned now for 3 to 5 years unaffordable, and especially at a time when all of a sudden there were a lot of layoffs in the economy, that now what do we have? We have a crisis because there is so much on the market at the same time that all it did was drive prices down. The market did what the market does, unfortunately, the artificial stuff around it just was a killer.
Well, but in bigger cities like Chicago, you can get a general recession, but you don't get the situation like where Robin lives in. Robin Spitali, been a contributor to the show. She lives in Far Hills, New Jersey. Must be far from somewhere, but anyway, Far Hills, New Jersey, and I think they were the home of Lucent. And this is, you know, years ago, Lucent lays off, you know, 5,000 people. Rabin says, well, like one in four houses is now for sale, basically nobody to buy them. The school that had 15 kids in a class has now got 12. I mean, these things can happen locally where you get this lesson drilled into you, but it's hard in a city like Chicago to see this. You need a really general issue. But, Kevin, here's these types of information we're talking about, and there is somewhat of a theme here. As you know, I get asked by people all the time, what do they think of the market? What about this? I mean, I get calls, you know, virtually hourly. And you see things going in the background that aren't tradable, and yet you worry about them. I mean, I've read articles that say if you look at the all the money that's poured into the market since 2009 that's driven the market to these huge levels, and I'm not saying that it's all that high. I mean, it's 17 times earnings. It depends on what you think going forward. If the earnings are going to continue to grow, it's probably not high. If it's think the earnings are going to stagnate or go down, it's high. I mean, it's the way it is all the time. But if you look at the amount of money that has actually entered the market, some incredible amount of it is firms buying their own stock back. I've read articles, who knows where these people are getting their information. I've read articles where it's upwards of 90% of the total money that's entered the market, or 80% or something, since 2009 has been companies. I mean, David talks all the time about the corporate balance sheets, how these 3%, you know, loans that they're able to get, they can't wait to take a 3% loan on earnings. Obviously, Microsoft, these people have earnings, and they're buying stock back. I mean, Citigroup came out, and their earnings per share were up whatever from last year. If you took out the amount of stock they bought back, the earnings per share were down. I mean, these are stats that you can't trade on. I mean, I'm not going to go short Citigroup today or anything like that. But, I mean, still, there's stuff out there, and you shake your head and going, That can't be sustainable, and yet seems to be so far. I mean, but I don't know how you put your finger on something like that and say it's not an actionable event, but it's something, I guess, to worry about. Not to the point where you worry about it when you're trying to play golf, but at some point you say, why are we doing all these things that it seems like we can't do forever without them blowing up on us? And what are we doing them for?
Good question. Good question. And as we tick down,
yeah.
We'll probably have to leave it that way till Friday.
Well, because I mean, these are things you. What is up these? Other than having the top executives and the people on the board having stock options, what exactly is the reason for a company to buy back stock instead of buying just paying a dividend? That's got to be the only reason.
I don't know. I suppose. Let me see. Let me try and conjure up real quickly a legitimate reason. I don't know, keep the price up, got to do something with the capital, and I can't get anything in the interest markets for it. So, I don't know.
So
I don't know. I'm reaching.
So when the attractive and articulate and bright Jay-Z gets on her first board, and the first thing she does is walk in when everybody in there has got stock options, suggesting a big dividend. How long do you think she stays on that board?
Forty-three seconds.
Yeah.
It takes that long to vote.
Yeah, here, don't let the door hit you in the behind on the way out. Boom, out you go. Kevin, thank you very much.
Hey, Mueller testimony today. Both sides will spend a lot of time trying to put words in his mouth.
Oh, absolutely.
So it should be pretty comedic.
Isn't this what you mean? No, that's not what I said. Isn't this what you mean? No, that's not what I said. It'll be like all afternoon. S&P futures down 750. Thanks, Kevin. Talk to you Friday. Be right back. Mr. Russell Rhodes.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN at PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, Norbert, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Jay-Z on the board doing a fine job. So, Jay-Z, what bar do I have to stay out of tonight?
It's called Draft Picks.
And they don't give you the mic and stand up in front there, do they?
Oh, no, they definitely do.
They do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
How else do you do karaoke?
Well, I thought they just kind of wandered over and you, like, you'd sit down and be somewhat anonymous. You don't have to actually get up and do it.
Oh, no, you're, like, on a stage.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Oh, oh,
oh. What time will we be singing I Got You, Babe?
10:05 on the dot.
10:05 on the dot, and I'll be Cher and you'll be Sunny, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
There we go.
That's
I love making him speechless first thing.
Yes, that would do it. SP Futures up are down 7.25. As if you know, guess who I saw who was a spectacular performer, and boy, talk about it. Beautiful lady, but couldn't sing a lick, was Cybill Shepherd.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
No, it's just you bring up Cybill Shepherd. I was back in Memphis where I grew up the first couple of days this week. I just got back to Chicago last night. And my father's girlfriend basically went to high school with Cybill Shepherd. And her daughter went to high school with Cybill Shepherd's daughter.
Really?
I was hearing all kinds of Cybill Shepherd stories. It's amazing. You hear a name out of nowhere, and then you hear it twice in the same week.
My girlfriend at the time knew, like, all these kind of odd people. She went to Northwestern. I won't say odd. They were just, you know, weren't exactly my group. And,
right.
And one of the ladies was the daughter of one of the biggest purveyors here in the city. You know, restaurant supply, you know, glasses, you mm-hmm. name it. If I blurted the name out, everybody know it was, so I won't. And she was, you know, a little high maintenance, shall we say. Is that a possible good word? So, and knew everything about restaurants, right? So we go to this place. Of course, it's, you know, pretty expensive, and it's a little bit of a cover, and for Cybill Shepherd to come out. This is after the last picture show and some of the other movies she had done. And I mean, mm-hmm. she's a terrific actress, obviously. And so the girl goes, "How's the soup?" And the guy goes, "You know, it's not very good." She goes, "I'll have it." Takes one bite, says to the guy, "Waiter, the soup's terrible. I told you it was terrible." I'm like, what are we doing here? that's not how Southside people act. Let's put it that way. You don't.
No.
If you ask somebody and you say it's lousy, you don't order it. And then if you do, you don't tell the guy, "Hey, this is awful." Okay. All kinds of things going on in the economy now. And I was talking with Kevin earlier. If you listen about, even in an article now, you can find, every article you can find a million different ways from sideways. And you could, if somebody hired me to be, I don't know if I'd have trouble doing this because I still have a moral compass, but to say how great everything is for everybody, you could make that argument. Okay. If you were going to say how rotten it is for a lot of people, you could make that argument. But it's all happening at the same time, and it's all true. I mean, you could. I mean, I'm looking at this one here. I don't know if I sent it to you. Probably not. But it's an article by Annie Nova. Oh, there's a name from CNBC. And many Americans who can't afford a $400 emergency blame debt. That, you know, people, it says 40% of Americans would struggle to come up with $400 for an unexpected expense. And it says, mm-hmm. just how are so many Americans so short on cash? They did this research on why people, even though they may have it, cash in the bank, because what you're starting to see now is cash in the bank pick up a little bit. But also, since credit card debt is picking up a little bit and student loan, the money is totally earmarked. You know, that even though it may be there, I need that for this month's credit card payment or this month's car payment. How can all this mm-hmm. be happening at the same time, Russell? I mean, how can you have huge segments of society that are absolutely paycheck to paycheck? If you've managed to been in some of the right stocks, by the way, you still got your 10,000 shares of Beyond Meat?
Of course I do.
Yeah, I mean, when are you going to sell?
when the market cap hits a trillion.
Yeah, no kidding. It's already worth more than Under Armour.
It's already ridiculous.
It's worth more than Under Armour. It's worth more than, like, half a, I think it's worth more than Chipotle, isn't it? Or maybe it's not Chipotle. It's one of those things.
Wow, what did I find? I doubt it's bigger than... Could it really be bigger than Chipotle?
I don't know. It's bigger than Under Armour. That I know for sure. And a couple others. It might not have been Chipotle. It might have been some other... Burger King.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's understandable. Yeah, Chipotle's huge.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's getting up there, and they... it's all because, you know, why don't you explain to listeners, because if they listened to the TV yesterday, they caught bits and pieces of can't borrow to stock, short squeeze, blah, blah, blah. Instead of me explaining all the time, why don't you explain how that can work?
Okay, and how that can work. Well,
or not work. I mean, how it can
hurt you if you're short of stock. When you and they actually did a billions episode on this, which they did a very good job with. But when you want to go short a stock in this day and age, you pretty much you hit a button and it goes short, and suddenly you have a short position. But what really happens mechanically is, you are borrowing those shares from somebody else and selling them short. And when there are not enough shares available, right now there are, where's the number of shares outstanding? Let's just say there's 100 million shares outstanding of Beyond Meat. If there are 100 million shares sold short, that means everybody has borrowed a share and sold it, borrowed one of those shares outstanding and sold it short. So there are no more shares available. Also, if you own the shares, you can request that your stock not be lent out to be sold short. And if your shares are lent out and sold short, you can also request that they get your shares back, which means that whoever happens to be short is going to have to buy the shares back.
Well, you can also request to get paid for it.
Yeah. I mean, you can request the capital. There are lots of things that you can do to the short seller. And another thing that you can do is you and a handful of other guys that are really bullish on the company can start buying shares, pushing the price higher, and eventually the short sellers might feel so much pain, they're just going to buy their shares back, and that creates more demand. So they're, and that's usual. That's the basic definition of a short squeeze right there. But all those other things that I talked about can put upward pressure on the stock as well. And there's a list every weekend in Barron's that tells you what companies have the highest short interest, which is the number of shares sold short. And some people, trading wise, will target that list and go, well, eventually all of those people that are short have to buy the shares back. Let's make them buy them back at a higher price.
Well, because I'm looking at the ones for how can a regular person tell if there's such a thing as a regular person? But if you look at the stock is 203. If you look at the 210 calls for this Friday, they're like a dollar and a half. They're $7 out of the money, and they're a dollar and a half. If you look at the, 180 puts, which is $23 out of the money, they're $1.60. So you sit there and say, "No, wait a minute. Why is that like that?" That means
why is that? Yeah, because according to put call parity, they shouldn't be that out of line.
No, I mean interest rates can cause calls and puts to have different prices, but not like this. Because what that tells you is like if you go in, and we'll do a trading episode, because everybody should know this isn't policy, this isn't, doing anything for, if you decide, wow, I bought this Beyond Meat at, $20 or somewhere, wherever the IPO was, now it's trading 203, and somehow I've been on a sailboat going around the world for 2 months, and now I come back and my stock's 203, and I say, well, gee, looks to me like it's going to 303 because it's going up. The most basic of retail tendencies doesn't make it bad. It just means that it's going up, so it must be going to keep going up. But I'm going to buy some puts to protect myself. Okay, so if you turn around and you say I'm going to buy the 185 puts for Friday, which isn't a whole lot of protection because you only got, what, 48 hours or 60 yeah. hours. But say you do that. If you buy those puts, the person you buy them from, it used to be a market maker, now it's, then it was a specialist, now it's like one firm. But if you buy them from Joe's specialist or Jane's specialist firm, now what's he going to do or is she going to do with these puts? They don't want to go short these puts without them being able to hedge themselves. Well, hopefully they can buy other puts, but that's probably not available. So their hedge is to sell the stock short. Okay? So now, but wait a minute. They can't sell the stock short.
No, their hedge is to buy the shares.
Oh, no.
If they sell you the puts, they need to sell short. If the market maker sells the puts, they need to buy shares because they're.
No, if they're. You always do the same thing with the put you do with the stock.
Okay. You got to sell short.
Yeah. So you got to sell short. And so now, okay, now they can't borrow it. Now what do they do? So what they really have to do now is make a determination, I don't have a hedge. Because there's no natural put sellers here, because who the hell's going to sell a put?
Right.
Because they can't borrow a stock. So now he's going to have to say, I'm really selling it. There's a big difference. I mean, if you go into a market maker, well, we probably should start from the beginning here, Russell. I'm not, as a market maker, which I was for 19 years. Russell, were you ever, you traded for a little bit, did you?
Well, I was in the euro dollar option pit. So
okay,
I
well, yeah, so you traded.
Okay, I was.
So you're,
but
I'm saying you really don't have to make the determination. If somebody comes in and buys a put on euro dollars or a put on the OEX, where I was, you don't really have to make the determination, like life insurance, how long is this guy gonna live because I gotta pay the whole policy out. You get a chance to turn around and hedge. So if somebody buys 20 euro dollar puts or 20 OEX puts from Russell or me, we're gonna turn around and sell the future. And we're gonna get our hedge. And we're not really taking a spectacular position here. We are in the sense that there's always gonna be more options than there are futures and if it really dropped, but I won't go into all that today. But the bottom line is we're not really selling insurance because we have a hedge. But now, if all of a sudden that future isn't there for us, we actually have to sit there and go, hey, Russell, my man, this thing's at $200. These 180 puts by Friday, and you say, well, chief, it's Wednesday morning. We don't have too long on this one. Yeah, but this thing moves $20 a day. Yeah, I know. We better get like $2 or $3 for these things or else we're not doing them. Because now all of a sudden we have to be Aetna, right? We have to actually make a determination. And we'll say, well, what are the chances of us getting some other puts to hedge ourselves? That ain't happening. So you and I actually have to be in the business of flat out selling the insurance, right?
Yeah.
Which is a lot different than normally making a market. And that's why you'll see the put prices totally at a different world than the call prices. Because if you buy calls, the market maker can always buy stock. I mean, there's never a rule against buying stock, right?
No. There's no rule against buying stock.
Yeah, but people try and put rules up all the time against selling stock or, you know, having to borrow it early and this, that, and the other thing. It's actually way harder to sell stock than it was 20 years ago.
You have to locate
and all this other stuff.
Those rules can, one of the things that I teach is long term, you never know if they're going to change those rules on you or not.
Well, I mean, if you want to, I mean, it, if you want
to, I mean, they did in 2008. They basically, prohibited short selling in a handful
right.
of the financials.
Right, but I mean,
which did not work at all.
But I mean, if you,
but
I mean, in theory,
that is a possibility too.
But in theory, if you call up PTI today and said I want to short 500 shares of the Spider, I mean, we would, in theory, have to locate that. But it's real easy to sell the Spider short. I mean, it's real easy to sell IBM short. It's real easy to sell McDonald's. I mean, there's enough float that it's not a problem. We would have to go through the machinations of saying to RBC, by the way, we want to borrow 500 shares. Is it available? And the answer would be yes. Our IB platform, it's quicker than that. You can do it yourself online. It'll let you know that it's available. And as soon as you hit the short button, it'll essentially take 3 seconds to get the locate permission, and then it will sell it short for you. And you don't really have to wait for upticks anymore like you used to have to. So selling short is easy. You just have to go through the protocol. You have to locate beforehand. Because people used to just short it and hope people found it, right? You can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But, so anyway, that, because today all you're going to hear about is Beyond Meat, and the reason why this thing is driven up, as Russell did a very nice job, is the people who have tried to short it saying it's got no business being over 180, which they're probably mm-hmm. right, but now it's 200, and I bet those people are going to be buying it back at 210 and wondering what, where, if there's a God, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Because
that's the worst experience ever.
Oh, got you.
There's a company that makes electric automobiles that some people love and some people hate, and I've periodically gone short that stock over the last couple of years, and I've never sold it short. I've only bought put options, and the reason that I bought put options, and I bought deep in the money put options, but at least I know that I don't have an unlimited potential loss.
Right.
I can just lose what I paid for the put option, which makes it a lot easier when there's a periodic short squeeze in the Elon Musk auto company. I can stick it out a little bit easier.
One of the guys who traded in front of me for years and years, nice guy, a guy named Kenny Kelly. He had this wacky mm-hmm. Irish sense of humor. Go figure, Kenny Kelly. And so one day, one of my clerks came in and he said, we just did this spread and whatever it was. And he goes, what'd you do? I said, we just bought this time spread for half a buck or something. And he goes, is that one of those spreads mm-hmm. where, you know, just what you can lose and always lose it? I said, I hope not. but, you know, whenever somebody says, I know just what I can lose, sometimes it does work out that way, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So make of how many more times can we roll the we're talking in China next week down the driveway and have the market go up 200 points like yesterday?
That thing's still going on?
Well, yeah, they dragged
it. I know it. I'm kidding.
Yeah, they dragged it out yesterday. They dragged it out.
I'm agreeing with you and trying to be yep. funny early in the morning at the same time. Yeah, eventually there's going to be fatigue on that if there's not already.
Well, there was yesterday.
It's not the number one. It's not breaking news like it used to be. I think there's an assumption that talks continue. Maybe not even every time they tell us that talks are continuing. But I think there's also an assumption that we're not going to get any sort of huge decision in either direction. Not going to be an all-out trade war, and there's probably not going to be a resolution anytime soon either, so people are paying attention to other things.
I think you're probably right, but still, it's good for a little
bit. There's
fatigue
on this thing.
But it's good for some.
Yeah.
You know, people want to be a believer. I mean, why not? Well, that's America. You'd like to think your people, despite all the evidence of the contrary, are telling you the truth. But, it's just the way that
it'll get resolved, and both sides will say they got a win, you know, and maybe five people will dig into it and figure out if we really got a win or not, and they'll go on TV and only have 2 minutes to explain whether we did or not, and it'll be such old news at that point nobody will care.
The only people
that'll care, I'll just use avocados because that's stuck in my mind right now, and that's actually nothing that has nothing to do with China. But, you know, all of a sudden, we're allowing all the avocados that they grow in China to come into the U.S., and it suddenly pushes the price down for avocado toast in New York City. People in New York City would notice that one niche where things have changed with respect to what they care about. The thing that I read that was somewhat interesting is apparently, and this is not necessarily about China, but it's going on in China, apparently Iran continues to deliver oil to China, but where they are holding the oil, it's not a, it's like they're just got it in a holding tank that's, let's just say, in the international part of wherever it's being delivered, kind of like when you're in the transit part of an airport, you haven't gone through customs yet. And so China's not breaking any of the sanctions, but they're still accepting deliveries of Iranian oil. And if something gets worked out with Iran, this is going to cause a huge glut of oil available on the market, because it's just sitting there waiting, and it's not just sitting there waiting to be shipped. It's sitting there waiting to be, you know, taken out of the tank.
Well, China never.
All the geopolitical stuff. That's the one that I think, you know, if it looks like the Iranians are going to deal and we're actually going to have a peaceful solution to that. And it might be why oil is not really rallying on all the geopolitical stuff there, the tensions that are going on over there.
It's up.
Because there's an overhang.
It's like it's up every morning on the news overnight when we do the show. And then the rest of the day it falls down. So the next day it's up again, but it's lower than it was the day before.
Well, and I tweeted out the oil skew yesterday. And it's there is some call buying just in case, you know, something we start a shooting war. But I think that the fact that oil is getting out of Iran, it's sitting there and waiting to be delivered, that overhang is what keeps the price down. That reality of, believe it or not, the supply-demand thing is impacting the market.
What, here's your buddy Mnuchin. Amazon has destroyed the...
My buddy? How am I friends with all these people?
The conservative guys, I just assume you're having over for dinner.
Okay. Yeah, we all get together in our secret society and, you know.
Amazon has destroyed the retail industry, so U.S. should look into its practices. Why do we have to go any further than they don't charge people tax and other people do?
That's part of it. I thought I paid taxes when I buy things from Amazon.
You do now, for some of it, not on all of it.
Yeah.
But
because we don't go to the grocery store anymore. When our Amazon groceries show up, I do know we pay tax on that.
I love going to the grocery store.
Do you?
How do I know what I want until I see it?
We just eat what we've had before.
Boring.
I really am.
I suppose if you're going to eat frozen pizzas, I don't have to go there to buy those. I can have those delivered.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so excited. The most exciting thing I'm going to do this week is singing "I Got You, Babe."
Well,
10:05.
But some of the stuff the fixes here, I think if you want to fix a lot of the damage, and what I consider to be damage, and all these exchanges that are nothing but pay for order flow, in our industry, all you have to do is say you can't trade within the penny.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the retail industry,
no.
Why not say you got to pay taxes no matter where you buy it from? I mean, right now, I'm saying...
I totally agree with you on that one. That's just especially when you start to get into higher ticket items, that really does make... I mean, there are people that will, if you live near the DuPage County, Cook County border, you'll make sure you shop on one side instead of the other.
Well, that's true. But I'm saying now, I mean, I'm going to guess 15 years ago, nobody paid. Why, out of all the things, if you have a parking ticket, they will come to the end of the earth to grab you by the short ones and make you pay.
Oh yeah.
Yet the people in this state, in Illinois, that have scammed the sales tax for thousands of dollars on Amazon, you could get those names, and nobody ever goes after those people. Is that because, like, Rauner and Pritzker's wife are on the list, or what?
I don't know.
I mean, what else could it be?
It probably does have something to do with it.
Because you're going to find out.
It's not what you know; it's who you know.
Well, if we were to find out the most blatant top 50 people that have bought stuff on Amazon and not paid taxes. Now, for those that maybe have got your head firmly where the sun don't shine, you are liable for those taxes in every state in the union. The fact that that they don't collect them means you're supposed to pay them. At the end of the year, and if it's over like $100 or something, you're supposed to do it quarterly. It's pretty onerous, the actual law. So what if you came up with a list of like the top 50, like if Senator Duckworth was on there and Senator Durbin's wife, and you imagine that list of what it would be of the top 50 people?
Oh.
People that have ordered like, you know, 12 TVs for the 12 rooms in their house. You know, it'd be...
Well, yeah.
I mean, I don't think that would be me. I mean, it might be you, but I mean, that list would be... I would love to have that list down on the air and read it off.
Of the people who totally been able to take advantage of that?
And I'll bet it's a who's who of everybody telling everybody else how much they should pay more.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, I was lurking around and I saw the Pritzker place up in Lake Geneva last week.
Nice place.
And it was, I'm sure they have 17 TVs.
Now, is it bigger than the Wrigley place? We're on the same level?
It is. It actually is one of the old Wrigley places.
Really?
Yeah, hey, I think it is.
Hey, we come back. Let's talk about these railroads, because the one's going right, the one going one's going west seem to be doing pretty good. We had the fiasco CSX, and now today I got Norfolk and Southern down almost $15. The ones going east aren't going anywhere near as well. Why do you suppose that is?
I don't know. Okay, I'm going to have to think about that during the break.
Yeah, we have SP Futures down 675. Come back a little bit. NASDAQ Futures down 31. Again, the big movers, Caterpillar, now down 6, because they had a big miss. Boeing had a miss. They get a big charge off, but they told us about it last week. They're only down 3, but Caterpillar is the big loser. And we now have NSX down 1566. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I got a story here about Russell, but a little after traffic, weather, and sports. The SP futures down 650, NASDAQ futures down 29. We've got the Dow has come back a bunch, only down like 50, which is almost all Caterpillar and Boeing. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 47.4%, FTSE down 68.9%, CAC around down 17.3%. Over in Asia, minor comeback, well, pretty good comeback from yesterday, but not as Shanghai and Hang Seng were down a lot more. The Nikkei's up 88.4%, Shanghai down 23.8%, Hang Seng up 57.2%. That oil is, what do we got oil doing here? My machine is locking up, but it'll unlock here in a second. JZ, why don't you do traffic, weather, sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time's now 7:35. Chicago weather today is sunny with a high of 76 and a low of 63. Phoenix is cloudy with a high of 104 and a low of 87. In baseball, the White Sox lost to the Marlins 5-1, Cubs lost to the Giants 5-4, and the Diamondbacks lost to the Orioles 7-2. In traffic, there's one accident on the Eisenhower going east at Costner Avenue, causing minor delays. Nothing else. Back to you.
Oil up 17 cents, Brent up 4 cents. Gold is up $5.60. But the news of today is Mr. Russell Rhodes has entered into a plea agreement with the U.S. attorney that for stealing 50 cardigan sweaters, he has to return 5. And that every month now, he has to go to the nun with a ruler, and she's going to certify that after vigorous interrogation that he has stolen no more cardigan sweaters. And that his family has to form a little committee of one or two to make sure they watch him and he's not going to the cardigan sweater store and walking out with four.
I'm not allowed to go into retail stores or the Amazon website is permanently blocked.
Right, especially
on my computer.
Well, especially the cardigan sweater section.
I can't go within 50 feet of any cardigan sweaters for sale in the United States.
Now, is that somewhat similar to this Facebook ruling that just came out? Facebook is to pay $5 billion for privacy lapses. Jeff Bezos has to certify that they're not going to be bad anymore. They're going to have the board have another...
Facebook is not Bezos.
Zuckerberg, sorry. Well, whatever. They're in the same cell. Zuckerberg, and then they got to form a committee of the board to keep track of privacy issues. And this week I spent the first 2 days agreeing with President Trump, which I never do. And now today I'm going to agree with Elizabeth Warren, which I never do. So what does that make this week? She came out.
It makes you bipolar.
It makes me something. I mean, she basically.
No, it actually makes you objective, and you're not prejudging what people say because who they are. Go ahead.
Just because you like or don't like somebody doesn't mean they can't have intelligent things to say and know something about some subjects, because they do.
Yeah.
And so she came out and said, it's basically peeing in the ocean, which you didn't use those terms, because $5 billion, look at the price of the stock. Well, let's see. Facebook opened the year at 130. They were trading, where am I getting them right here? They were trading 202, and now they're down to 199.80. So if anybody thinks that they haven't made more than $5 billion using these practices, I got a bridge for you. It's just like... Russell stealing 50 cardigan sweaters, and it's unprecedented fine of 5 cardigan sweaters. You mean he gets to keep the other 45? What do you mean? The fine is unprecedented, but he gets to keep the other 45. What about, who cares about those? It's unprecedented. I gotta start doing this stuff. I could be good at this.
What, screaming unprecedented?
No, just making it's my story and I'm sticking to it, no matter how stupid it is.
Making $250 million when you know you're going to have to pay a $15 million fine?
Yeah, I can do that.
You know what really stinks is in our business, if you get caught, you got to return, you pay a fine, and don't you return like 3 times what you made?
It depends on who you are. If you're somebody like you and me,
I mean, that's kind of the rule that we operate under.
But
the
bigger you are, the less that rule even comes in.
Oh yeah, eventually you can plea it down where you get to keep something. But You know, that's the rule. Is I think it's three times what we make plus a fine.
It's such a joke.
You know, that should be what it is everywhere.
Well, but I mean, the by the way, you are a professor. My professor at the University of Chicago, when he talked about crime and punishment, no, he's not talking about, you know, rapes and murders, which I think are in a different class, but basically all, well, 90% of stealing is money related, correct? Basically. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, if you don't at least, because let's assume for a second that thieves are rational, at least in regards to their thieving. Right? I mean, it may not be that to become a thief maybe isn't rational, but let's say thieving is rational. So if you steal 5 cardigan sweaters, the penalty should be however many sweaters you stole divided by the chances of you being caught. So if you got,
right.
You've got a 50-50 chance of being caught, the penalty has to be 10 cardigan sweaters, because at least in your mind you'll say, what's the point? Why should I get off the sofa and go steal sweaters when I'm probably going to end up not ahead of the game. So mm-hmm. The bigger you get, if you're like, you know, Citigroup or Wells Fargo, if you steal $2 billion and there's a 1 in 100 chance you get caught and the fine is $5 million, as unprecedented as that may be, if you're a sleazy board member, you're going to say, go, girl, this sounds like a good do.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
Yeah, and that $5 billion fine is less than 1% of what the company's worth.
Yeah, I mean, but now on the low level, guys like you and me, if you fail to pay $5 to park your car, the fine is $75. So it's or $60.
Yeah.
It's 12 times what you didn't pay, which is so far different than what like a bank has to pay. I mean, it's not even in the same world. What if? I mean, I know you're not a big drinker, but. What if you walk into the 7-Eleven and there's a sign over the Miller Lite thing and says, "Please do not steal, but if you steal from 10 to 20 cases, the fine will be 2 cases."
You walk out with 10 cases and then you just say, "Oh, hold on, I'll be right back," and you walk back.
Or even the guy's not going to be watching, or the lady's not going to be watching you every time. So if they're doing something for somebody else, making them a sandwich or whatever they do, and you happen to put the 10 cases in your car and drive off, it may be 1 out of 5 times you get caught and you return 2 cases.
Yeah.
That's not a bad do.
Yeah.
That sounds to me like I'm drinking free forever. I might as well have a party forever.
The
only thing that I would ever do like that was I used to go into the 7-Eleven around the corner from where I grew up, and I would just stick my mouth on the Slurpee thing and...
Yeah.
And they didn't want it back at that point.
No.
Yeah.
I would imagine that they did not. You're not old enough for when you could actually find a couple of bottles and bring them back and you know actually.
Oh, I am old enough. I'm totally old enough for that.
You remember deposit bottle?
That's another one of those things that came up. I was telling my kid about that. That was because I lived like right on the edge of the end of Memphis, so. I was basically out in the country where people would throw bottles out of their car.
Yeah.
When they were done with them. But yeah, I totally went through all that.
Why do you think, I mean, just out of curiosity, why don't we go back to deposit bottles when we got landfill problems and everything else? Why don't we bring them back?
I actually had the exact same question in my mind, and it probably is the whole economics behind it. It's probably just cheaper for the bottler to, you know, make those PET resin bottles with plastics, which do hopefully mostly get recycled, and they don't have to go through the process of, you know, buying the bottles back, cleaning them out, refilling them.
Well, in some parts of the country, I think water was an issue. Obviously not in Chicago, because we got nothing but water. But even for recycling, why not? Did you ever buy beer in Canada? We went up there skiing. What a fiasco that was! With the this is a long time ago. The deposit was like, you know, 10, 15, 20 cents a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird part was, if you went back to the beer store, that's not where you returned the bottles to. You had to go to a recycling center, and they gave you the 15, 20 cents back. So if you stayed in
a
hotel,
I never stayed there long enough to
Well, we were young and we were doing
to go through that process.
What people would do, like the hotels where the people went skiing, they would leave like 5 cases worth of bottles as like a tip for the maid because it was like a lot of dough, and they would take them back. It was a few bucks a case, you know, type of thing. But anyway, it was back when a dollar sort of was a dollar. But the all right, so we've got world news, we've got bizarre stuff going on with oil, like you say, the Chinese. But you started that story, and I didn't let you finish it. Where exactly? I can't figure out. There was this treaty, okay, the world's worst treaty, according to the president, that we pull out of. And now, so we've increased the sanctions. The other people that signed the treaty, and there was a lot of them, they are still in there. They didn't pull out. I don't think China was ever in there, were they, or were they?
I didn't understand. When I read the article, I didn't understand why China felt the need to continue to. Maybe it's if they accept the delivery of the oil, we suddenly impose more. I don't know what else we can do to them right now. But that was a disconnect when I read that article. That, you know, that there's this area within China that kind of, you know, the officially the oil has not entered China yet, because maybe it's a place that could be a dropping off point where things get dropped off and then continue onward without going in and out of the country, which would be another cool way for them to get around sanctions, huh?
Well, I mean, well, the British grabbed the ship going to Syria. I can't believe Syria signed the thing. Why are they held by it? Other than the fact that we can make them, we can steal the oil coming there. But I mean, other than that, I mean, why? I guess why can't Iran sell to Syria? I mean, they didn't sign any agreement. I mean, I'm not favoring Iran here. I'm just so are we throwing a blockade up against Iran? And that seems a little, you know, it's kind of a reach.
I'm trying to scan through how the sanctions work, which is more than I can read while you're talking.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. Well, we had sanctions against Iraq, and then we said, okay, they could sell some. With the first sanctions,
Iraq could sell a little bit, and all that cash was going directly to Saddam Hussein. It was awful.
Well, the first thing with Iran, weren't there like 7 countries that were still able to get the oil, and the 7 countries read like everybody. Like the oil was still out in the system. I mean, I the detail on this, I mean, it sometimes does not match the hyperbole. It just seems that way.
Yeah.
So what the...
Well, that goes right back to what I was saying about what's going on between us and China is they're going to continue to talk. They're going to announce with some fanfare that we've come to a deal. And when the really smart guys that have the time and the interest to do so start to dig into it, they're going to figure out that things haven't changed an awful lot. People have figured that out with the revamped NAFTA as well.
Yep.
So it's
I don't see how they're going to
police. A lot of hyperbole.
Yeah, I don't see how the hell they're going to police the, 60% of all the auto parts have to be made by people making over $13 an hour. How are you going to police that?
Yeah, that's a good one to try and keep up with. I don't want that job.
No, I don't. Well, so, all right, now we're back down to the Fed next week, and we've got Mueller about to be grilled today, where he's going to give Woodward answers, and everybody's going to try and put words in their mouth, as Kevin talked about earlier, which is probably true. And I just, as much as you know, I'm not a... I mean, obviously, Trump was, in my mind, ill-prepared for the president with his background because... In his TV show, you know, he wants to be boss, basically, and it's hard to be boss in that job because it was not designed in that way. I mean, it just, there's people that work at your pleasure but don't work for you. I mean, the Attorney General is not your lawyer, it's amazing to me how many people are into it that really don't understand that this is a, I mean, I don't
know. But it's not a, you're not a dictator up there.
No. What do you mean?
You can suggest things, and then you've got to convince over half of the Senate and over half of the House to agree with you, and sometimes even more than that.
Right.
So and Obama said that. Yeah, it was like some people complained that he wasn't able to get get all the things that he wanted to do done, or that he promised done. And he said, "Yo, well, there's this other branch of government that I got to work with. I can do my best with executive orders, but I can't, you know, I do have to work with them.
Well, and if you go back, well, Obama, I don't think Bush did much of it. But if you go back, I'm not so sure if Clinton was a big fan of him either. But if you go back, look at the, from Clinton's first term, Obama's first term, I believe, and Trump's first, well, he's in his first term. When I say the first term, the first half of both of their first terms, all three of their half term, first terms, I forget about Bush. I don't recall, but, I should. They had both houses of Congress under their party's control and still didn't accomplish much.
Yeah, that's the part that you just gotta wonder why.
Trump got the tax thing.
Why weren't they
through.
Able to implement the things that they said they really wanted to implement?
Well, Trump got the tax thing through.
Yeah, he didn't fully cancel Obamacare.
Well, but he also the tax thing has been, to my mind, it was a very bad bill, and I think it, you know, the promise for a lot of it could have been a lot more stuff in there that I would have liked to see, and Obama did okay, manage to jam Obamacare through. Because they didn't listen to the other side, when they wrote up all the detail, the thing became a fiasco. And look what it's done, what all this has done to essentially our economy. We have, I mean, one of my favorite subjects, obviously. We have very brilliant talking heads on the air all day long, and people from the Fed and Mnuchin and all these people talking about the, I mean, I listened to Steve Leisman and four other guys. Dr. J was on the panel, yesterday, and, all they're doing is talking about the Fed's got to cut. There's no inflation. Yet, come on. If you look at the increase in what goes on in the medical community in the last 20 years, and you look at how it's now 20% of the society, the math is just there. If you take Russell Rhodes making $100,000 a year, and all of a sudden one part of his thing, he used to pay $5,000 a year for medical care, and now it's $25,000. Well, guess what? Not only is his inflation up for the rest of his friggin' life, but also he now doesn't have enough money to buy the other stuff that he used to buy, so the demand for that actually goes down. And you got people's, if you don't count the 25, then the other stuff, you're shaking your heads. God, why can't we get the price of cardigan sweaters up? Because Russell can't afford them anymore, right? He can't afford them anymore because he's paid $3,000
a month. I'm wearing the ones with the holes in them.
That's right.
Hey, do you know what you just did?
What?
You just answered the question that you posed at the beginning of the hour about, or the topic, or you basically solved the topic that you addressed at the beginning of the hour, where you were talking about, you know, 60% of us can't come up with $400 immediately.
Right.
Well,
right.
It's because the 60% of us are living their life the exact same way, but that they've been for maybe 20 years, but more and more of what they make is being taken by, being taken by things like healthcare and education and taxes, for God's sakes, in Illinois.
Yep.
That's what it is. It's that the inflation, the real inflation, the one that we really live, not the numbers they give us, continues to grow much more so relative to what we've been making.
I have a question.
The only way that you can maintain your life is by taking on debt.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I mean, I have a question for you.
You just answered it.
You wander about the country. I don't think you're in first class all the time, but most of the time. But you wander.
Oh God, I only fly first class.
Oh, I would imagine that.
I just can't even imagine going past that first wall anymore.
Well, I can't either. I mean,
I'm like Adam Ant. I don't drink. I don't smoke. What do? I fly first class.
And the rest of the people are there. Do you refer to it as steerage or the rabble?
Yeah, I just can't. When I've had to get on a different flight because I got to get home for one reason or another, I say, honey, this is, you know, I love you because I'm back here in 23D or whatever between, you know, the two fat guys riding the motorcycles.
Yep. I ever tell you a wacky story when I was on the board of the SIBO? Listeners will not believe this. We used to have the one board meeting a year in Washington. Well, somehow or another, the thing went late, and, you know, of course, so we go out to wherever the hell we're going. I don't know if we were national or Dull. I think we were national. And I look around, and it's one of these later flights, and there's, like, nobody in the waiting room. And yet, all the staffers from the SIBO, they all get the first class bump ups and everything. Well, they've always run comfortable sitting in first class when somebody on the board, say me, is back in steerage, because I didn't fly that much. And so they would. But if you in those days, they'd give you all these coupons. So they give you these coupons. Come on, Tom, you set up in first class. You don't want to be back there. I said, hey, look, as long as I get an exit row or my big long legs aren't up in my chin, I'm fine. I don't care. I mean, I could care less as long as I get enough leg room. And oh no, come on, sit up with us. We get a load of this. And I kid you not, the SIBO group filled up the entire first class section on the 737. Guess how many people were in? Well, there might have been a couple other people. Guess how many people were in steerage?
Less than maybe 12.
Zero.
Zero from SIBO?
Or no, zero the entire plane. This would be, you know, they weren't as booked as they are now. There was so few people on this plane, because I don't know what happened. Anyway, everybody was on the one before, and this thing left like 10 minutes after the one, whatever. It was some screw up. There was nobody in the coach section, and every seat in first class was taken.
That's funny.
That's, you know, whatever.
People are like, what? And the younger people are like, how does that happen? Back in the day, airlines were actually forced to service routes that they were going to lose money on.
Right.
I mean, the government made them do that to make sure places like, and I'll go home again, Memphis, Tennessee, were getting air service. There is very little air service to Memphis now. Because it's not mandated.
No, and if you, I don't know how like Procter and Gamble. Well, now that Southwest is there, maybe I don't see how a big firm like that can be in a town like Cincinnati. They must cost them a fortune. Unless they must cut a deal of some kind, because otherwise, I mean, every time you fly to Cincinnati to fly from there to Chicago to go to Europe or someplace, the flight from Cincinnati to Chicago costs more. I mean, now that Southwest is there, I mean, but anyway, Russell, what am I? What I wanted to ask you is, why do you think, like, some of this stuff, like, out of all that you and I have been talking now for years, why all of a sudden 3 weeks now, or ago, 4 weeks ago, did people discover gold? Something's happening here, like the song says, and it ain't exactly clear. Because I've had more trouble talking to clients when they ask me, what do you think the market and all this stuff's going to be in the next 6 months? Something is churning here, and I can't put my finger on it. Is it, you feeling the same thing or no?
I am feeling the same thing, and the spidey sense tells me there's something, but not exactly what.
Yeah, I don't know. It's eerie.
And I have been told, my wife actually tells me this, when I get that feeling, that I write in my calendar 6 months down the road, because that's I'm always too early.
Oh, me too.
Honestly, it happened like last May or June, and then we got a nice sell-off in the fall.
Yeah,
I forgot to write it in the calendar.
I'm wondering if it's going to be, you know, something late August, September, if we're going to see a little turn down here. I don't, or something, or gold running up. I hope it's not, you know, people start shooting people. I hope it's not something like that, but something is a little odd here. The idea that I think the companies are kind of running out of gas at buying their stock back in, some of them. And it's been a big pusher to the market. I mean, what do you do with that number, Russell? Were you for a 10-year period? There's some studies that say virtually all or a big percentage of all the money that's actually entered the market from elsewhere is from the companies themselves. What do you do with that? It's a piece of information. I can't trade on it, but I mean, yet it's. I look at it and I go, I'm not so sure that's so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. It's something you're fighting if you're trying to be short.
Right, oh, God, yeah.
But as far as the fundamentals go, it's not a it's not a signal. Basically, it's a signal that interest rates are too low.
I think it is too, and we're going lower.
Because what they're doing is they're borrowing money in order to buy shares back. That's really what's happening. Well, you're seeing, their balance sheets have a shift from the amount of equity to the amount of debt that they have outstanding.
Well, how much?
It's a smart thing to do. It's time to refinance. You know,
well, for 15
Why not?
Seconds.
If you can issue 5-year bonds with a really low interest rate. Good Lord, you should. That's what the company should be doing. If you're an owner, that's what you want them doing.
All right, I had a quick question for you. We only got 5 seconds. I have to hold it till next week.
Okay.
All right, take care of yourself, buddy. SP Futures down 875. NASDAQ Futures down 41. Jay-Z, very nice job. Good luck at karaoke tonight. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.